The Committee on Veterans Affairs on the 6th of February 2012. First, today I'm going to open up a public hearing on 40. I'm going to go out of order, first of all, folks. I'm going to go between 4063, 4064, and then we're going to come back to 4065. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 4063. Would you read the bill, please?
Yes, Co-Chair. 4063 allows applicants, for the record, this is Shannon Newell with Committee Services. House Bill 4063 allows applicants to certain licensed occupations to substitute military training or experience for education or training required by the licensing agency or board if military experience or education is substantially equivalent to that required by the board. There are two amendments to this bill right now. Amendment 1 changes board to Department of Public Safety Standards and Training on page 16, line 8. Amendment 2 includes Amendment 1 and removes the educational substitution for physician assistants under the Oregon Medical Board, but allows military training to be used for continued education requirements. This bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
We have a sign-up sheet. I know I'm going to slay your name again, Mark.
Sansucci.
Sansucci? Close. We're getting closer, aren't we?
You got it.
Hey, I got it. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Co-Chairs and Committee. My name is Mark Sansucci. I'm the Department of Defense Regional Liaison for Military Families for the Northwest. Good morning. I know this is the third time you would have heard me, and I will try and not be too redundant, but for the record, I'd like to make sure that you know how much we appreciate you taking up House Bill 4063 so quickly to help our military veterans get credit for their training when it relates to occupational licensure. Last year, with over 1 million veterans unemployed and with a post 9/11 unemployment rate of 13.3%, and an unemployment rate of our 18 to 24-year-old veterans at 21.9%, the Department of Defense began supporting efforts in the states to ask the states to give separating service members credit so that they may not be held back from finding employment or finishing a degree. We're asking legislative leaders like you to establish policies that ensure separating service members do not have to repeat requirements completed during their military career to obtain academic credit or an occupational license. Last year, four states enacted new laws to help grant our veterans credit towards licensing. So far for this 2012 session, there are 24 other bills in 14 states resembling the one before you today that we're asking you to support. It is important to us that you know that we're not asking for direct licensure if it's not equivalent. In cases where the regulatory agency or board determines partial credit, but it saves the time and expense for a veteran, helps get them where they want to go as far as occupation. Even if it's not complete, that's what we seek. We only seek credit where credit is due. A couple of other points to consider. You and I have already paid for our veterans training within Department of Defense schools and within the years of experience in serving our nation by just paying our federal tax dollars. Also, more credit given to a veteran towards licensing or a degree or towards their certification, the more school slots can be made available to other civilians in programs you may have here in Oregon where there may be a waiting list. In response to the White House Task Force on Veterans Employment and from recent passage of the VAW Act to hire the heroes in 2011, the Department of Defense is right now working feverishly with the United States Department of Labor to link service transcripts of military occupations with private sector licensure requirements, while concurrently asking state regulatory authorities in pilot states like Washington, Illinois, and Maryland to review select military occupations to determine whether the training and experience are sufficient to be useful in rendering licensure credit in a given occupation. As is well known, Oregon is home to thousands of veterans and is a desired location for separating and retiring military members when choosing where to live after they leave the military. A 2010 Defense Manpower Data Center study reported that Oregon had 1,296 military people separate or retire and move back to Oregon, calling Oregon home. And I'm also waiting on 2011 data to be a little bit more current. But at around 1,296 annually, you can expect that highly qualified ex-military people will continue to enjoy Oregon's quality of life, and many will continue to choose Oregon when transitioning into their civilian careers. Finally, I'm frequently asked what other states are doing in this area. In May 2011, Washington State passed two bills, one for medical occupations and one for non-medical occupations that went into law in July. The Washington law modifies the statutory chapters of 21 commercial occupations and 14 healthcare-related occupations. It's considered a best practice by us, the Department of Defense State Liaison Office, and your bill is very much modeled after that one and would also be considered a best practice if or when passed. Since appearing before you about 3 weeks ago, I did provide the committee with answers to two questions that were posed, one from Representative Parrish on what other states may be doing as far as relating to credit for teachers, towards teachers, and also there was a question about what building trades Oregon already does give credit for, so I provided the committee with that, so hopefully you've had a chance to look at that. So finally, we asked this committee and this legislature in Oregon to join the other 14 states and now rising now in session that are considering doing this kind of help for our veterans, along with the four states that did it last year. Thank you for giving me this opportunity, and I stand by for any questions you may have.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to note that Mr. Sanssouci now has made several trips here to Salem to speak before our committee. How many is that to date, Mark, on this particular bill?
Well, it's three on this one.
Three, Mr. Chair. And those are all the way from Seattle. And he has served as someone who's provided us background information on what the other states have been doing with regard to similar bills. And Mark, I've got to commend you for the written information that you've provided us on the questions that were posed by the committee the last time. You've done an outstanding job, and every appearance has cost you time and travel, and we sincerely appreciate your help with this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and thank you for taking it up.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark, just to be clear, I mean, you basically went over this, but I'm going to state it a little differently just for the record to be clear. If there's a highly technical career that requires a lot of education and national testing to get your accreditation, this bill doesn't do anything to circumvent that. You basically said that. Am I correct?
Mr. Co-Chair, is Representative Huffman absolutely correct. We only want credit where credit is due, and we don't intend, it's not intended at all to be circumventing any processes in state policy you already have. Absolutely.
Follow-up? For example, physician's assistants, have high rigors, and, you know, wouldn't want anybody coming into the state, and like you had said, trying to gain credit that wasn't trained for or deserved.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Huffman, absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions or comments?
Seeing none, thank you. Appreciate it, Mark.
Paul Evans and Mr. Willis.
By the way, we were kicking the bejeebers out of him because he was in the Air Force.
Yeah. Well, not everybody can pass the test, Mr. Co-Chair.
There you go.
I knew you'd have something to say.
Co-Chair Escobar, members of the committee, professional staff. For the record, my name is Jim Willis, and I'm director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I've already testified in favor of this bill in the past. I have turned in written testimony, so I want to read one paragraph of that testimony, and then I'll be available for any questions. This concept is a win-win proposition. Veterans, especially our Oregon National Guard veterans, will be given the opportunity to prove their military skills, education, and experience that meet licensing requirements so that they can re-enter the workforce quickly. And licensing agencies will be able to get more qualified people into the workforce, helping Oregon's economy. I believe, again, this is very good law. I hope the committee will move it forward quickly. and I thank you for your consideration.
Is it civilian Evans now?
Co-Chair Escoval, I'm actually still in the Guard for a couple more years, but it is as close to civilian as a Guard guy can be.
Now, Mr. Co-Chair, could I ask, what branch of Guard, sir?
That would be the Air Force.
Thank you
Air
very much. I rest my case.
Sir. Co-Chair Escoval.
So it's 8:12 in the morning, right?
Well, it is a little bit before the golf game, but yes. It's
very good.
Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Evans, and I'm actually living at 744 Main Street East in Monmouth, Oregon, again. Last time I was before you, I was living in Scappoose, so I want to make sure on the record that I'm where I'm supposed to be. I have a written statement. I'm going to also briefly outline some points, but before I get to that, I want to say thank you, and I also want to remind us all of the work that we have to do. I have two or three things to loan you, because I know, of course, legislators can't get gifts these days, but to loan you for the duration of the session. That is a P-51D Mustang with a red tail. Now, some of you might know what that stands for. It stands for a 332nd Fighter Group, otherwise known as the Tuskegee Airmen. It is Black History Month, and there was a movie released called Red Tails that talks about the group. The reason I mention it today is really there's a important lesson that they can teach us. Through government policy, though we don't talk about it in such terms, but through government policy, through the efforts during World War II to desegregate different parts of the service, and eventually when they desegregated the force in the 40s, late 40s, government was able to change people's lives. It was able to change society. When I was in Iraq in 05, I was actually a member of the 332nd. They unfurled the flag for the first time since World War II to fight in Iraq. And the reason, again, I mention that is that people didn't care what color, what gender. I can't remember, quite frankly, how many whites or how many blacks or how many whatevers. All I knew is that we fought together and that the changes made in the 40s really made a profound difference in our country. You have before you with this bill, I think, and the other bills that are, again, building on the work that you did so well in 2009, an opportunity to transform the culture and transform the workforce. The two other books, two other things I brought in, again, for loan, have to do with what was done right after World War II with the GI Bill and what happened when it wasn't done right after World War I, the Bonus Army. Really a tale of two approaches. Now, I've been before you many times before. I'll probably be before you again. But this month is critical. Iraq is over. Afghanistan is entering its final stages. And the window of opportunity, the American interest in veterans, is beginning to close. We can see it. We can see it in lessened dollars from D.C., we can see it in lessened attention on the news, and I'm asking you, urging you, to do what we can while the sun is still shining to make sure that these policies are put in place. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Any questions or comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Paul, I appreciate your history lesson very much, and I think I can speak for all of the committee when I say that we will not tolerate, this committee will not tolerate veterans having to camp out either in our nation's capital on the mall or in any of our states in order to get their just due when they come home. So thank you very much for your very compelling statement.
Thank you.
Anyone?
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Larry Neuswander, John McCulley, and Marilyn Lorenz.
This is so cool. I love the design of these planes. I'm going to adjust them.
I think those used to be called tank busters. Brad?
Mm-hmm.
I think those were called tank busters.
Are they?
Yeah.
My Mustang.
Yeah. Oops. Now did you sign up for the wrong thing here?
I, w-
I intend to tear into this.
Yeah, to say, wait a minute here, you're for the lottery.
I think I can wait a little while.
We'll scratch you on this one, Larry. Put you on the other one.
Proceed, John.
Good morning, Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt. My name is John McCulley. I'm here today representing the Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association, which is an organization of speech pathologists and audiologists around the state. It's a little uncomfortable being here to express some concerns about parts of this bill because I really do appreciate its intent and would fully support the efforts that are being brought to you today. I think it's really important to take action here. The issue that our organization has with the bill relates to sections 11, 12, and 13 as it affects speech-language pathologists, audiologists, and speech-language pathology assistants. I would note that in the Washington law that was referred to here in Senate Bill 5307, specifically excluded from that bill were the speech and hearing sciences in Washington state. So at least there was some recognition in Washington that it was not appropriate to include that health profession within the scope of the legislation passed there. One of the reasons is that the military, as I understand it, in the area of speech pathology, has no speech language pathologists. And part of the requirements, as outlined in Section 11 of the bill, is supervised experience. If there are no supervisors who are accredited speech-language pathologists, there can be no supervised experience that is gained. And while I realize that there is really no impact because of that, the way the bill is written, is still a concern of adding words to the statute if they don't mean anything. If you get what I'm trying to say. We would prefer that sections 11, 12, and 13 be removed from the bill. We don't think it is going to negatively impact the intent of the legislation here and believe that it would be a good governance issue if indeed there is no impact of having the words in the bill, then they really don't need to be in there. So, Mr. Chair, that's my pitch this morning, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Marilyn Laurent. I manage the Standards and Certification Program for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Co-chairs and members of the committee, our agency regulates private security, private investigators, and polygraph examiners for the state of Oregon, as well as the criminal justice professionals and fire service professionals. The requirements of House Bill 4063 are consistent with our standard practice in several areas, and I believe that our director, Eric Skablix, testified before you during the interim and provided you with some examples of our current practice in the areas of private licensure. My written testimony provides a couple of examples as well, and I won't repeat them here. House Bill 4063 formalizes our practice in several areas and does expand our authority in the area of polygraph examiners by requiring us to consider equivalent education, and we appreciate that. Language in the -1 amendment and then part of the -2 amendment was introduced at our request, and that clarifies that the equivalency evaluations would be done by the department and not by the board. Our department staff does those comparable evaluations in all of the other areas that we regulate, and it allows for much more timely evaluation rather than waiting for quarterly board meetings. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question would be for you, John. If in the future the military experience would include speech and hearing, and would you be amenable to language that would include, I mean, I don't even know if it would need to be done now or if that happens. A line about that, maybe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, I don't think there'd be any objection if in the future there were speech-language pathologists who were able to provide supervised training in the military to add that. My guess is it would be already reviewed under the current rules of the agency, because they don't look so much as to venue, but as to that supervised experience. So whether it's in or out,
probably wouldn't
make any difference.
Thank you.
I have a question, John. If you have this in statute, and it's an irrelevant situation, because the military has nothing, what's lost or what's gained?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that question. The concern that I have, I guess, is more, as I said, a good governance one. If the words aren't going to mean anything in the statute, why put them in? I mean, that's the basic argument I'm making. If you're intending to do something and the words don't do that, then why have them in?
Okay, then my next question would be, it may come to pass in the future, like Representative Boone was talking about, and then it would already be in statute.
Or, Mr. Chair, it may not.
Well, it may or may not.
Right.
So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I don't see, you know, I understand it. I understand what you're trying to say. You don't want something in that has no relevant to the situation, relevancy. But are you hurting anything? I guess that's my question.
Mr. Chair, from our standpoint, if it's not necessary, then it doesn't need to be included. I mean, I understand and I can appreciate what you're saying. That's just the position that we're in. If the words aren't necessary, then they don't need to be in the statute.
Any further questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, I understand exactly what you're saying, and I don't have a problem with that. My problem is that I'm worried about this bill, you know, be in the short timeline that we have to work, if we have to wait for an amendment, and then we have a deadline to get this bill finished and through to the other side, and I would hate to see it held up in that sense, but that's just a concern. I don't know what the schedule's like for the committee, if we could do it that fast if we decided to do that, so...
John, do you have an amendment ready?
Mr. Chair, the request is in at Legislative Council. It was delivered on Friday, and I haven't heard back that it has been completed yet.
Okay, we haven't received anything yet, so.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll take a little time out. I want to talk to Co-Chair Witt. I'm going to adjourn for... on Veterans Affairs, and then I'll open the public hearing on, 4063. Elizabeth Remley.
I still can't get that name.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Elizabeth Remley. I work at Vox Public Relations Public Affairs, and one of our clients is the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants. The physician assistants are in one of the sections in this bill. And I had a conversation with several members of the committee. The physician assistants are in favor of and will support the Dash 2 amendments, which make military training it'll allow the medical board to allow military training for continuing education. The original bill allowed at the medical board's discretion to substitute military training for one of the, for some credits in a nationally accredited program, which even the military doesn't do. They actually send all of their folks who they wish to be trained as PAs to an inter-service military school in Texas, so for PAs. So we talked to, I talked to Co-Chair Witt and a few other folks, and we thought that it would be better to have it as part of the continuing education that's required of PAs as opposed to the original and initial training. And that is because, as I talked to Co-Chair Esquivel about, there is nothing that the medical board could do to allow military training to be substituted for the two-year program that PAs must go through and the exam that they must take. And the only thing that the bill would do would put the medical board in a very awkward position of having to deny any veteran who comes and asks for that exemption to be made, because the medical board would not be in a position to allow the exemption, essentially. So I just wanted to share my support for the Dash 2 amendments, and if you have any questions, let me know.
Any questions? Comments?
Just a comment. Mr. Chairman, I very much appreciate Elizabeth's approach of coming to us in advance and teeing up the potential problem and coming with a solution for that. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on 4063, and we'll carry it over to Wednesday. We'll carry it over until Wednesday. John, if you can get your amendments in, I'd appreciate it, so we can take a look at it in time. And then we don't have a fiscal on it anyway, so we couldn't pass it out today. We're waiting on Wednesday. And then I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4064. Do you have a sign-up sheet?
Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt, this is Shannon Newell. House Bill 4064 was heard last week in a public hearing, and today you are just here to vote on the measure. It requires the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries to notify the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs when either BOLI receives written information from a veteran or service member, or when a complaint is filed by a service member or veteran alleging discrimination. It requires the authorization from the veteran or service member for BOLI to notify ODVA, and it defines uniformed services. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact and no subsequent referrals.
Okay, we have 4064 in front of us. It is a something we've had a public hearing on, and now we have a work session, so I'll take a...
Co-Chair Esquivel, I move House Bill 4064 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Matthews moves House Bill 4064 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any comment? Seeing none. Anyone have any problem with this bill at all? Seeing none, so move. Representative Matthews, do you think you'd like to carry this bill?
Be an honor, sir. Thank you.
Representative Matthews will carry 4064 to the floor, and we'll pass it, I'm guessing, 59-0. I'll close the work session on 4064, and I will open up a public hearing on 4063.
4065.
Or 4065, I'm sorry, wrong one. Okay, we have, you want to tell us what it's about?
Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, House Bill 4065 comes to you from the Interim Committee on Veteran Affairs. It establishes the Veterans Lottery Fund and directs the Oregon Lottery to establish a veteran-themed lottery game. Net proceeds from the veteran-themed game will be transferred to the Veterans Lottery Fund, which will be administered by the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs for veteran education, training, job creation, and other economic development programs. This measure does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, first of all, we have General Caldwell, Mr. Evans, Major Evans, and Jim Willis again.
Good
Dr. Willis, you can join us.
Okay. Trying not to share my cold.
That's a good idea.
We'll use his mic.
In fact, you could stand in the back of the room and talk.
As long as you don't sneeze, I'm not going to kiss you. So come on up.
You're not going to kiss me. I hope not. It's the pellet.
Okay. Well, I'll testify in the House today. Co-Chair Esquivel and members of the committee, again, for the record, I'm Jim Willis. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Affairs. I've already appeared before the committee in support of this bill in the past, so I will read one paragraph of my testimony, make one statement, and then, of course, be available for questions. In my written testimony, the following statement is made. ODVA has currently programs that provide services to veterans that directly impact veteran education, training, and economic development, including the Educational Assistance Program, the Emergency Grant Program, the Campus Veteran Service Officer Program, and the Small Business Repair Loan Program. Currently, only the Educational Assistance Program and Emergency Grant Program receive general funding. The statement outside my testimony that I wanted to make is, some time ago and during a couple sessions of the legislature, we presented a concept called the Oregon Veterans Small Business Development Program. And that program simply establishes a very small amount of funds to help veterans in part that want to do business startup. This body, some sessions ago, passed the Small Business Repair Program, which allowed service members who were deployed in either Iraq or Afghanistan to come back and borrow some funds to start back up their business that lay vacant for anywhere from 12 to 15 months in those days. And it's pretty hard to keep a business going when you're in a combat zone, and now you got to come home and start it up again. So the legislature wisely passed that program and at that time funded it. Right now we don't have any funds for it. But this bill, were it to pass, would allow us to continue that program. I would propose, of course, with legislative approval, to begin the Oregon Small Veterans Small Business Development Program and to continue the Campus Veteran Service Officer Program. So, again, we're strongly in support of this bill, and we're available for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department and the Interim Director of Office of Emergency Management. I, too, testified earlier in the interim on this bill in support of it. Totally concur with the Director's comments. I just highlight a couple of numbers that I know you'll find of interest. Originally, and you've heard me say this before, when 41st Brigade was in Iraq, before they came back, we surveyed them. 51% of the soldiers that were in that unit, 3,400, were declared themselves unemployed when they were in Iraq. That number's down to 14% right now, largely due to about 21% of them actually went to school. If you recall, we had the Veteran Service, Campus Veteran Service Officers on the campuses then. As comparison, the 3116 out of Eastern Oregon, 38% of them declared themselves unemployed when they came home, but only 7% actually went back to college. Their numbers are around 14% now that are still unemployed in Eastern Oregon. Now the job market's a little tougher over there, but the units have been working very hard. I really think, this is anecdotal, we certainly don't have the empirical evidence to prove it, but I think by losing those campus veteran service officers, we didn't get that connection that a lot of the 41st Brigade members did, and they were from all over the state, but primarily from Portland to Ashland. And I think if we can find a mechanism, and this appears to be a good one, to reestablish those, I think it's going to benefit Oregonians in a big way, because we'll have them productive, earning employment, paying taxes, and becoming a better citizen after their deployments. So I highly recommend the bill. I think it's got a lot of potential. And I also believe that you're going to see a lot of veterans and a lot of people who are friendly to veterans join in these games that don't currently play. And I think that's a piece that we're hoping. I don't know, Liz Neiswinder, who's the expert on it, can probably speak
closer to those terms, it's an unknown again. But I've talked to a lot of people who don't play the lottery, and they said if I could buy a lottery ticket for a veteran, I would do it. And I think that's the case, and we'll see actually a growth in the games totally. So that concludes my testimony. Again, support the bill, and thank you very much for having the hearing.
Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Escobar, members of the committee, again, for the record, I'm Paul Evans, and thank you for putting up with me being in front of you again. I actually had an opportunity, I believe, to testify on this when it became a committee bill, and I said at the time that one of the fun aspects of being a citizen now with no connection at all to the government except being in the Air National Guard, again as a traditional guy, is that I can be the citizen and say what I think. So here we go again. Number one, the Campus Veteran Service Officer Program is critical. It really is. There's no debate. Everybody in this room knows it. The facts are there. Number two, we all know the return on investment for veterans' dollars when looked at in terms of outreach. Campus Veteran Service Officers don't get education money for veterans. What they do is they actually help them navigate the system so that all the other supplemental funds that they've earned during their service come into play. So an entire family can exist while the veteran's getting the school. And when you look at those connections, it's about 1,000 to 1 or more in terms of dollars that come back to the state when you empower that process. Now, I understand that priorities are tough, and last time I was before you, afterwards a couple folks came up and said, boy, you're kind of angry about this because the prioritization and the match-offs and the comparisons between programs for kids or programs for college or programs for other things. And I know you have huge choices, and I know the consequences of your choices are significant. What I also know is that for those that have borne the price of the war, that 1%, the other 1%, not the 1% that's currently in the news all the time, but the 1% that actually wear the uniform, the 1% that worry every night because they don't know if their husband or son or daughter will come home, they also merit some consideration. And the fact of the matter is, if this actually went to the ballot, which I still propose taking 2% of all lottery proceeds for veterans programs, if it went to the ballot, it'd pass. So I think this is actually a good intermediate step. It's a good compromise. And at the end of the day, I think that the state will benefit from this going forward. So I'll stop there, respond to any questions. Again, thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Any questions?
Representative?
Comment, Mr. Chair. Thanks. At a town hall in the Dalles on Saturday morning, I was visiting with Columbia Gorge Community College President Dr. Frank Toda, which probably everybody in the room knows Frank, and he was lamenting over the loss of the campus veteran services officer and was just stressing how important it was to their operations and to veterans in the mid-Columbia area. So just kind of anything we can do to try to get that program built back up, I'm there.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to add one piece to this that Paul didn't mention, but, you know, we keep hearing a lot about the middle class and all of these types of things, and you think about the class of folks that maybe, you know, somebody who's an E6, who their family is and what their wages is. If they have kids and they are post-9/11, I mean, this is also a group of folks who have this GI Bill potentially for their children. And if the soldier themselves is not going to use it, you know, we want to make sure that the soldier is connected to the fact that their child or their wife can use it. These are families that probably wouldn't qualify for a Pell Grant, aren't going to qualify maybe for scholarships, and this might be the only money they have to get there. But we have to also have people who can help a soldier through that process of transferring this to their wife and their kid and making sure that the benefits get directed. Because otherwise, you've got families out there who aren't using this benefit and they haven't tapped it yet. They don't know how to tap it. And if they're not currently connected to the military, those you know, that opportunity to talk to somebody who's in their organization or their unit goes away. So these campus service officers not just play a role for the veteran, but potentially for these kids who might, you know, might not all otherwise qualify for financial aid, but have some benefit there through the parents. So firm supporter for this.
Co-Chair Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a concern that was raised about this bill, which I was skeptical about, but for the record, I'm going to ask any of you. The concern was that this bill could potentially promote gambling among a number of people in the veterans community in particular, and that was not a good thing. And so I have personally not received any communications from a veteran that said, please don't support this bill. And I just, for the record, want to ask the three of you if any of you are aware of complaints from individual veterans, veterans organizations, or veterans service officers, or kindred folk expressing concern about this issue.
Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt, Paul Evans again, and thank you for that question, because I actually have had conversations with folks not about the bill in particular. There's no opposition whatsoever to that, but rather the frustration that the only means available seems to be through the lottery. And I'll share that with you. I mean, if we lived in a perfect world, we wouldn't be trying to get lottery funds, because it is one of those situations where some people, once they involve themselves in gambling, do find themselves slave to that process. But we live in a world of risk. And I also, from operational days, I lived by the 80-20 rule. 80% of the gain, 20% of the risk. I'll take the 80%. And in this particular case, we don't have any other options. The state is broke. We understand that. And the reality of not doing this is far worse than the potential reality that it may impact some folks. And I hope and pray that the programs that are in place for all Oregonians that find themselves slave to gambling are effective and can do that. But what I see this is, as it really is a life raft, and it's a way to make sure that we at least put something forward toward the campus veteran service officers at this critical moment in history when thousands of veterans are coming back, trying to get back in their lives. So I'm very sensitive to that issue, but I think at the end of the day, the value of the program far outweighs any potential risk. But that's just my opinion.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, again, Jim Willis for the record. I'll come at this from a little different angle. I've seen no empirical evidence at all that veterans are in any way a vulnerable population with regard to gambling. And I'd want to see that be from someone that had the ability to present it in a credible way. And I'm telling you that I haven't seen that. Secondly, as someone has already, I think it was the general that testified, I have had people say that don't involve themselves in the lottery at all, that they would buy a scratch-off ticket, and we should be clear on the record that we're not talking raffle here, we're talking scratch-off tickets. But I've heard people say, I would buy a ticket if I felt like it was going to benefit the veteran. And I don't think that creates a vulnerable population. I think that's just somebody that has $1 or $2 in their pocket that they can afford to donate it to veterans. So I'm not concerned at all that this is creating a problem for the veteran community.
Thank you,
Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, Mike Caldwell. I would concur with both the comments. I think that there is a lot of opportunity and risk out there for any human being to partake within, and I think that they make those choices with the free will. To suggest that, you know, this expands that risk, well, I suppose you could argue that. But again, where's the evidence? if we're really worried about what the veterans are, their largest risk, it's probably alcohol. And if we want to approach it in that regard, then maybe that's a different committee, but it certainly would be the higher risk, I would think.
Thank you very much. Additional questions or comments for this panel? Seeing none, gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Ryan Green. Good morning. Welcome to our committee.
Good morning. Let me get situated here. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ryan Green. I'm here today representing the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. This will be very brief. I just wanted to state for the record that my organization discussed this in a board meeting last week, and if I could start by answering the question you asked the other gentleman, pretty much our board of directors echoed what Director Willis had stated, and that many of them do not gamble, but to benefit the veterans community, they would actually spend that extra couple bucks to buy a scratch ticket. Any new programs that can establish, generate revenue for veterans to access education, jobs, we want to be there as a national organization to support that. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your comment and your statement. Ryan, we traditionally, when witnesses appear who are veterans, we provide them the opportunity, if they choose, to tell us what branch of service they're from and where they served.
Actually, I did not serve. I am a person who's paralyzed. They hired me to do the legislative program for them, and so I try to serve them and my country now by representing them the best I can. So,
well, thank you very much. Certainly appreciate that. Questions or comments for Mr. Green? Not seeing any. Thank you very much for your support. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Larry Niswender. Here's Larry. Good morning.
Good morning, Co-Chair Witt, committee members. For the record, Larry Niswender, Director of the Oregon Lottery. I was before you a few short weeks ago, and we talked about the bill, and I just wanted to be very brief today and answer any questions you might have. Lottery is neutral on this bill. We have done research to know what other lotteries have done in this area. If they've been asked to create veteran-themed games, we would learn from those other lotteries. If this bill were to pass, we estimate that our average scratch ticket that we produce has a net proceeds of about $325,000. On an annual basis, if we were to produce one veteran-themed game two times in a biennium, that's roughly $750,000 that we think would be netted from that. If it's silent about the type of game, I know as Director Willis testified that it's about a scratch-a-ticket versus a raffle, but it's silent about the type of veteran-themed game. If the lottery were to produce a raffle-themed game, such as what we do for the Thanksgiving raffle or for the St. Patrick's Day raffle, the net proceeds from an average raffle are about $1.2 million. So that would probably be something, those numbers will probably be numbers that may show up in a fiscal statement or a revenue statement when that's discussed in Ways and Means, it, based on the fact that it's got a referral there. And when I was before you, there were three questions I couldn't ask, and I followed up with you in an email. What is the average time that a scratch-it ticket is in the market? That's 6 to 8 months. The normal lead time to develop a game for a launch normally takes about 8 months. And the question was, if this legislature passed a bill in February, would there be time for a game to be produced by the November Veterans Day? And the answer was yes. So the previous testimony, I think we spent quite a bit of time with question and answers. I think I was able to answer all the other questions, but if you have any additional ones for me today, otherwise I think I've given you everything I can do.
Thank you very much. Larry, I think many years ago, I remember vaguely you telling me that you were a veteran. Am I right?
No, unfortunately, no. I was okay. I'm a veteran of being in the state government for 33 years.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments for this witness? Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. So in light of Larry's testimony, I would suggest that we get on the record that we would not want to limit the Oregon Lottery to any particular game.
That's right. Okay. Good. And just if I could follow up on the problem gambling testimony that you heard earlier.
Yes.
Our records indicate and research show that it's somewhere between 1% and 3% of lottery players may have a problem with that, and we do. We have one of the most best-funded problem gambling treatment programs in the country. We dedicate 1% of the lottery proceeds to that. Treatment is free, it's confidential, and it works. The nature of these games, however, we don't find that the treatment community is focused on the scratch-it ticket players or the raffle ticket players. The predominant focus is on video lottery players. In that respect, since this would be taking an existing game and dedicating it to the veteran theme, we don't think that it would have any adverse effect on that community.
Very good. Appreciate that information. Additional questions or comments?
I think you should get with Representative Wingard. He's got some design ideas for this ticket that were quite amusing. So,
all right, very good. Thanks so much, Larry. Is there anyone from the public who would like to testify on House Bill 4065? And I just want to note that before I close this public hearing, that we have received for the record written testimony on House Bill 4065 from Joseph Riley, with the Veterans Service Officers Association, and that is in the packet that was handed out. Not seeing anyone from the public who wishes to testify today on House Bill 4065, I'm going to close the public hearing on that bill. And with that, we do not have all the paperwork that's necessary to accompany House Bill 4063 at this point, so I am going to carry that bill over for a work session for our next meeting. And with that, before I gavel us closed, is there anything for the good of the order?
So are we waiting a fiscal for the lottery one?
We are awaiting that, and I'm also understanding that there may be an amendment or two that's that we're anticipating coming very shortly. Anything else? Representative Matthews.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This weekend I had the opportunity to do a town hall with three other members of the legislature, Representative Sheehan, Representative Juan, and Representative Schaffler. And I just wanted to kind of put on the record for this group to know that, you know, folks are struggling, and we all know that. They don't expect us to accomplish much in February, unfortunately. But I guess I would just suggest to this committee that I have high expectations for February and that I do look to this month to get something done that we can walk out with, and then we can walk back to our community and hold high, and particularly when it comes to our veterans. They are in need, and Mr. Evans put it perfectly clear. Unfortunately, the reality is if we don't strike now while it's a hot topic, it's going to start to diminish in value, and that's going to limit our ability to do what we need to do for these fine folks that have served their country proudly. So with that being said, Mr. Chair, I hope that what we're waiting on is truly just paperwork and that we can move whatever we get in front of us in this committee that's going to further help our veterans and get those campus veterans officers back into business. So thank you, sir, for indulging.
Thank you, Representative Matthews. Great statement and great work on 4064. Thanks for that. Representative Boone.
Thank you. And I would like to just follow up on what Representative Matthews just said, although he may not know her or remember her, but some of you out there might remember Representative Donna Nelson, who served on this committee and even chaired it at a point. And she would say, February, well, it'd be louder, but she would say, February, that's Valentine's Day, that's Heart Month, that's Oregon's birthday. We've got all these reasons to have a heart. And I could just see her saying, have a heart for veterans. So in memory of, and she's still alive, but in memory of her service to this committee and the passion that she brought, and I don't have even an inch of that passion. She was from Texas, I believe. But she had the big hair, the big heart, everything, and that's what she would say. So let's prove it that we can do it, at least in this committee. So
absolutely. Very good. Appreciate that very much. Anything further for the good of the order? Seeing, hearing none, we stand adjourned. Thank you.